to the Round Ball with Hedo Sever and Andy Burnell. Sever, Birch, welcome, lads.
Welcome, and good to be back, mate, with a very special guest today.
Sever, how's life, mate?
Yeah, very good, thanks, Hedo. How about you boys? Busy week?
Mate, out of lockdown. I've had a week. I've had a week on the town. Birch, you out of lockdown yet?
I've had. We just got out of lockdown here in Canberra. So
yeah.
Look, we were lucky for a long time, and but this one's been probably a month. You know, nothing compared to some of the other states, but it it impacts everybody in its own way.
Well, I've been celebrating for a week, so anyone still in lockdown, I've been helping them out by having a crack. Now, boys, today's show is brought to you by MG Active. Jump on the MG Active website, become a member today. They've also got a six-week challenge happening from the 1st of November until the 12th of December. So if you need to lose those COVID kilos, jump on mgactive.com.au. Look how fit Sever's looking, everyone. That's the boys and Montana at MG Active getting him in. Now, today, we've got a special guest on the line. But before I introduce him, I just want to know how he became such a good football coach and didn't end up in jail after being looked after as a child by our own Andy Burnell. Barney Smith, welcome, my man.
Morning, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. So can you take us back before we get started? And you probably don't remember, but I've been told that the one Andy Burnell used to babysit a young Barney.
Oh, there's probably an all-star cast that had that duty at some point. But for me, these days now, it's too long ago for me to remember. I can't get past, I think, beyond when I was 15 these days. So
yeah, well,
I'm not now, sure Birch, if it was Birch.
That was your job back then, Birch?
Oh, look, it was yeah, it was part of the mandate. At the time, I was skipper of the AIS and the Australian youth team. And Ron at the time was Ron Smith, Barney's dad, was assistant coach, assistant manager, whatever you want to call it, of both. And every now and then we got the duties were to go and babysit Luke and Barney. So, yeah, we had some fun. And everything you have seen in those child movies in Hollywood, yeah, it was that and more. And he's doing all right, the young man now. So now, I mustn't have been that bad.
Now, Barney, before we get started, we had a little bit of a chat off air, but fell just short on Friday evening in the NPL Adelaide competition, and from all reports, a pretty good game.
Yes, unfortunately, Friday night was the penultimate game of our season, the grand final between us and Adelaide City. It went right down to the wire to penalties, and unfortunately for our team, we lost 3-2 in the penalty shootout, and Adelaide City won the grand final. So so close, but no cigar.
And all round a good season for your boys.
Yeah, look, great season again for our team. Proud of our group that because last year it was a carbon copy. We had a great season. We won the league, came top, went through the final series, got to the grand final. Everything you can ask of a team to do. And but unfortunately, last year again we lost the grand final last year in regular time. Wanted to get back there this year, as you do when you lose one. You want to get back there and try and win again. So, and I probably would say that the second season, or any following season when you've lost the grand final, it's harder to get back there because one, you're a target, you're a marked team that everybody wants to beat, and everyone else is trying to beat you to it. So, to get back there again, very proud of the team to do that. Feel for them, and I know they'll have sore heads and not be feeling too great this weekend. But if you want to try and be great as a team and want to achieve things, you have to accept that at the top level, you know, you're going to have games go your way and sometimes not go your way because it's the fine margins at times and it doesn't always go your way. So they need to lick their wounds and pick themselves up and have another go next year.
And Sever, you understand about, I guess, that being hunted as well from back when you were at those good teams of Bankstown and those sort of things as well.
Yeah, in the NPL in Sydney, it was like that. Like you won one, and then everyone will be after you every game, especially if you're playing for the number one team. It's literally like I call it a semi-final because there's not many real good grand finals being played these days, but semi-finals are usually the cracker games. So pretty much I used to take every game as like a semi-final, you know, as a like do or die. And yeah, I understand exactly what Barney's just said there, you know. And I've heard awesome things about the South Australian League, and it's very, very competitive, and a lot of good players are getting picked up out of there.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it is. This year was a very strong competition. If you look at the FFA Cup, we had Adelaide Olympic representing the state as one of the sides in the round of 32. They got to the round of 16. They beat one of the top teams in Perth, and they didn't make our final series in South Australia. Wow. So they ended up finishing seventh, which is, look, a very good team. And do I think they're a finals team in our state? Absolutely. But I think they ended up having something like 10 or 11 draws in our regular competition. So they didn't get enough points to get into the top six, but were able to get to the round of 16 in the FFA Cup. So that's a great testament to the competition here. And there's a lot of young, good players coming out, starting to show their faces in the A-League. And teams competing, trying to win it. That's, again, why we're proud of our team to be able to finish top of the league again and get into the grand final. And it's just, as you would know, playing in these, it's so hard to win them.
Yeah.
Those fine margins. We looked at the game on Friday night. We could feel sorry for ourselves. But Adelaide City were going into their sixth grand final without a win.
Wow.
They'd lost the last five. Our club has lost three of them. So somebody had to finally win one. And that probably gives us hope that you just keep going and going again, try to get back there, and sooner or later you'll get one. So,
Barney, there's two schools of thought, you know, with first past the post, obviously, and the grand final set up. And it's, you know, we in Australia, you know, really the one that is crowned, the one that wins the grand final, playoffs is the really considered the champion. Having played in Europe, in England, you know, first past the post kind of always meant, you know, the champion, you know, in my mind. But I have experienced what you experienced on Friday, you know, when I took over Canberra, Croatia for a bit, and, you know, you get to the grand final and it's that kind of one game, you know, anybody can win on the night. Do you have a preference? Is because, you know, I prefer the first past the post. But having said that, when I was at Sydney Olympic, the time we won our first national championship, you know, we came from fifth spot. So I kind of contradict myself because that wouldn't have happened. But I still think, you know, the first past the post over a whole season should be rewarded with the championship. But, you know, what do you think?
Look, I don't mind. I think as long as you, you know, state what it's going to be at the start of the year, and everybody knows if it's first past the post and that's what you're chasing, or if it's a grand final series, then, you know, you're going to get a chance in the final series, whether you finish first or you finish sixth. We've grown up in Australia around final series in all codes. And I understand that's why. Here in Australia, we play final series generally is because that's what all the codes do. It builds that excitement at the end of the year. Sometimes the format probably needs to be tweaked a little bit in how you deal with the top six or top five. Like in our competition, we have a two-leg playoff between first and second, and then a knockout series from third down to sixth. And in our example, us against Adelaide City, you know, for the people watching the game, we played each other three times in 4 weeks. Is that too many? Maybe it should be, you know, you both get to semi-finals, so you can't meet each other. And then if you do meet each other, it's going to be in the finals. You're not playing each other so many times. Look, that could be tweaked. But look, I don't really mind. I think the format at the moment means that there's three trophies up for grabs. That's all we look at the start of the year. So when we go through pre-season with the group, we say, right, there's three trophies up for grabs. The FFA Cup, so there's the South Australian version of qualification. Yep. If you win that, that's a cup series and a cup final, and you can win a trophy. There's a trophy for premiers for finishing top of the league. And generally, that's come with a great reward to play in the NPL Championship, and you get to play against all the other top teams around the state. that's been fantastic up until 2019. And we've had some really good participants there with Metro Stars and Campbelltown have both won that NPL championship. And I think Sydney United's probably the most successful. They've won the most NPL championships, which I thought was a great format. So there's a huge carrot to win the league. You get a trophy and get to compete in that. Unfortunately, because of COVID, it hasn't happened the last 2 years. And then you got a final series. You get another opportunity to win a trophy and win the grand final and be crowned champions. So you get the best of both worlds having the final series, as I see it, and two trophies up for grabs. However, if you're a football purist and you want to follow how the sport or the code is conducted overseas in most countries, you would then say, well, we just go with first past the post. So,
good point.
I guess it's a good motivating factor as a coach, but too, you've just split that up into three trophies. It's pretty easy to get the boys up and about through pre-season. If there's a lull mid-season, just keep talking about the three trophies up for grabs.
Look, absolutely. And whilst we're on the wrong side of it at the moment, finishing first and losing in the grand final, who's to say next year, as you said, Birch, we might finish fifth and then go through and win it. So...
Yeah. Yeah, it works. It works, you know,
works both ways.
In mysterious ways at times, doesn't it?
Now, sometimes Barney, before we take you back to how you become a coach and all that, for a long time, Sevo, Birch and I have been talking about youngsters having a go, being able to get a go in an A-League team. Are you finding now through the NPL Adelaide that a lot more youngsters are getting looked at by A-League teams and especially Adelaide United?
Yeah, look, I think more recently, if you look at Adelaide's team, we have a greater selection of local talent that's come through South Australia's development programs into the A-League side and sometimes through the NPL into the A-League side. So as a local over here, it's great to see a lot of SA boys representing the state playing for Adelaide United. You know, if you rewind 10 years, there probably wasn't as many in the team, but there's certainly a lot of players and talent coming through. I think South Australia's had a great pathway and has shown to develop players. A lot of other A-League sides have come over here and picked boys out of South Australia and given them opportunities in other teams. And obviously, you can't fit everybody in. Recently talking about Tede Yenge, who was a player with Adelaide Comets. He then... didn't get an opportunity at Adelaide United, went to Newcastle Jets last year. And we got to saw glimpses of him, and he's now signed for Ipswich Town in England, and he's got a professional contract over there. And some people go, why didn't he get into Adelaide? And it's, well, he's got so much competition, and Adelaide and Carl can only fit a certain amount of players into his squad. You've got the Toure brothers, his older brother, Cassini Yenge, and some great attacking options at Adelaide. There's just not enough room to fit everyone. So... And I'm sure that's the same in other states. It's great to see a lot of these younger players getting opportunities to play in the league. And we should be using that as a way to continue to develop and improve our young players to compete not only on the national stage, but to be able to go overseas and be professional footballers, because ultimately that's going to strengthen our national team.
Yeah. And Seva, we've had that conversation. You and I did an actual podcast on giving young blokes a go. In the A-League and seems to be working, I guess, just from Barney's point.
Yeah, and I like the point that he said that there's just not enough room for everyone. And a lot of people will say, oh, how did he get missed by Sydney or Wanderers? Like, if we had maybe 18 teams in the league, like they do in Europe, a lot of players definitely won't get missed. So I reckon that's a really, really good point that I had never thought about. But I think that's probably one of the most predominant ones, I believe.
Now, Barney, take us back. How did you start your coaching career and obviously work your way to where you are now and a prominent coach in the NPL, Adelaide?
Well, being a goalkeeper, you spend a lot of time watching the game and professing that you know everything. and certainly blaming everybody else when it goes wrong. I think being around football... my whole life, obviously your parents have a big influence in you, whether you play or whether you coach, just in terms of being around football all the time. I had got to the point where, you know, I was professing to know everything in the later stages of playing here, as I wound down playing in the NPL here. And it was my wife who said to me, well, if you think you know everything, why don't you become a coach then? Put your money where your mouth is. So she kind of pushed me into it a little bit at that stage. But I think it was a natural progression. I wanted to stay involved in the sport, and going into coaching was a natural progression for me. I started off, I started off working in the state championships here with the late Martin Crook, who he was the head of the SASE Institute at the time and a prominent figure here in coaching. He went on to be the Australian youth coach, a very well-known person in South Australia. He used to do all the licenses, and I reached out to Martin, who was also a former goalkeeper, and we do have a goalkeepers union. It is a thing. So I reached out to Martin, and he encouraged me. He said, look, I've got an opportunity for you with under 14s. It's a state national carnival. So we have representation from northeast, south and west. You pick the best kids in your region, and then we have a competition, a carnival, where they all play against each other, and we need coaches to do that. He said, it's a great opportunity for you to dip your toe in the water and see if it's for you. So I took over the north region and picked the team, and we went to the national championship with the under 14s. Loved every minute of it. And I think probably the deciding factor was a comment my wife made afterwards when that national state carnival finished. She said, I've seen a spark in you in the last 3 months I haven't seen for a little while. So I think that's a good indication that coaching's for you. So I then started doing some of the courses with Martin through the, back then was the old junior licenses and senior licenses. And depending on the level you played at, you got some exemptions. So did my senior license with Martin Crook, and then started coaching at under 18s level at the club that I'd played at.
Okay.
Had a season with them, and then it was actually the club I'm at now. Adelaide Comets came along and offered me a senior role to take over the senior team in my second year. And I was a little bit nervous at first because I hadn't done the senior team, and I'd only been working with younger players.
Yeah.
And it's a complete different job when you work with younger players compared to when you work with senior players. So, but I took the job. I wanted to get into a senior role. The club at the time was in a different stage to what we are now. We were in the second division or NPL one, and we were looking to get promoted. So I spent 3 years there coaching them, and we got promoted in the third year into the top division.
Yep.
I took some time out at that point. Life gets in the way. So obviously you're not a full-time coach. You're not earning an income from it. And the business opportunities for me meant that I wasn't able to continue at the time. So I had a spell. Worked on my business, and while I was doing that to stay involved, just continued to do my licenses. So the C license and B license, etc., that you can go to, I was doing those in the background to keep ticking over and stay involved. Did a few assistant roles and helped out a few friends that were coaching, senior coaches in the NPL at the time, to just stay involved but without the time commitment. And then when the time was right and I had the business at the point where I could sort of let go of the reins and have it run under management, I was then keen to get back involved. So got back involved and have been coaching now for the last 4 years, back in the NPL here in SA, and love every minute of it.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, Birch, when Barney was growing up and you were around, did you see him becoming a coach? I know it's probably hard to say back then, but did you see that he was going to make something of football?
Growing up in his household, it's pretty difficult not to be involved with football on some level. I live 5 minutes away from Ron's house, and he's been a friend, coach, and mentor to me for many years, and why I was able to live my dreams, you know, at high levels of football. But with Barney, Luke. The other boy has gone a different way, but, you know, he's still a football mad kid. Barney, I think, is his own man, and he's on his own path now. If he's taken in half of what his father would, talk about every single day of his life, then you know, it's a wonderful platform and foundation to then go on and become his own man in football. And that's what he's doing. Very successful businessman. And you know, I think he can become, you know, a very successful coach, you know, and go on to manage in A-League and become a national team coach. You know, I don't know if that's where he wants to go, but certainly, you know, he comes from football stock, a wonderful family, you know, the whole foundation and platform are there. And, you know, he's the sort of guy that if I ever had an opportunity to be sporting director or director of football of an A-League club or higher levels, European club, you know, he's a sort of young, talented manager that, you know, I believe the game needs here in Australia. You know, sometimes we go and grab one or two recycled coaches from Europe, and bottom line is they're here because they can't get a job in their own country. So that tells you a thing in itself. You know, for me, watching Barney, you know, going to NPL setups like the Adelaide Comets, and people speak very highly of him. And I'd just be interested to know, Barney, is it something that you want to progress onto? And I know the business is still paramount and forefront, you know, with everything. But is it something that if a full-time opportunity with an A-League club came up that you'd be looking at or interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and there'd be many like me that have been doing, you know, really good jobs for clubs all across Australia. Probably similar to the comment before about the players. There's just limited opportunities, you know. If you look at the A-League at the moment in terms of how many jobs there are, and there's so many good coaches at the moment sitting on the sidelines that have either had an opportunity at A-League level or have been close. That's probably the trouble for us as well, is that there's very limited opportunities. I've always seen myself working full-time in football, so it's probably a matter of when. If you talk to people probably around me and around our club, some of the board members, or maybe even some of the players, yeah, they'll tell you that I'm nuts and I spend way too long. Even some of my other coaches, fellow coaches who are good friends, after games, so, you know, we'd be chatting after a game and they say, come on, tell me how many hours you spend on the game here. And I say, you don't want to know. it gets a bit obsessive. Everyone's dream, I think, has always been to work full-time in football. So if the opportunities came along, of course, would love to. It's probably easier in your home state where you're set up and you're living. But as you know, with football, you've got to be prepared to move wherever the opportunities are. And that starts to narrow down how many people really want to do it, because then you've got to make decisions about uprooting and moving to other states and then potentially even abroad. But if you look at a lot of our successful coaches that have come through, and Australian coaches, which I think is what we want. We want to see our own homegrown talent, just like players. And I think Ange has been the best. He is the, you know, the best coach that's come out of this country that started coaching in state football and then in the national competition. And then obviously everybody knows his history. He's been the trailblazer for many others. And I think that gives everyone hope. And it's great to see, you know, guys like Warren Moon, who's done fantastically well in Queensland at NPL level and now getting an opportunity too. So I think you bide your time. You're always learning in football and as a coach. And if the opportunity comes up, great. If it doesn't, we've got a great platform underneath to continue to stay involved. The comments you made before, I sometimes feel like I go and do a license and it's a welcome breather to learn from a different mechanism and get an opportunity to network with other coaches and learn from them. As a welcome breather to Ron, I feel like I'm constantly being tested and under scrutiny. he obviously loves the game. He's a madman when it comes to that. And he's lived a whole life of football, something that I can only admire and respect. And in some way, hope that he's proud of what I'm doing. But I could certainly tell you when he watches one of my games and I think, yeah, we played really well today. I think we got everything right. The things have been working on. I could see that in the game. and get on the phone to him. And about 10 minutes in, I'm scratching my head. It's like, this is wrong, that's wrong.
Barney, I was just about to ask, does he give you critique? Does he give you sort of what you do and do well and don't do well? But he obviously does then, yes?
He can't help himself. Particularly when he's here as well, instead of it, at least on the phone call, I can hang up on him. But when he comes here to South Australia, and he's obviously comes here to see his granddaughters and spend time with the family, I can see he's always itching to get out to training. I have to let go, and I let him take over the team and do a few sessions as well, because he loves it so much. But then when we come home from a game, it's more like the next 4 hours. I've got to hear about what's happening. At least when he's in Canberra and I'm over here, I can shut the Zoom off or hang up on him. But just a remarkable brain when it comes to football. So I feel like I get the best of both worlds. One, an education that I'm very lucky to have, that you just wouldn't get on a course. But then you also can go down that path and learn from other streams. I was just at the WNPL Grand Final yesterday. My friend Simon Catanzaro is a coach of Salisbury Inter, and they won the Grand Final, won all three trophies. So a fantastic year for him.
Wow.
Ahead of our junior football in South Australia, Cristiano, who was a great player for Adelaide United, and he heads up the coaching there. He came up to me and he said, "Oh, I've just been on a course with your father." He's like, "Oh man," he said, "he sees things." He goes, "You just don't see it, but then when he says it, it just seems so obvious. You think, how did I not see that?" He said, "And he does it every 5 minutes." I said, "Yeah, well, you can imagine my life then every week when he watches our NPL games."
It's nonstop. It's nonstop, Edo.
Barney, quick question. Sorry, Birch. I want to ask this question in a different way, and probably we could get the answer that we're looking for. If you turn back 10, 15 years, 20 years ago, if you were a player, which coach would you like to play under? For example, a Klopp, a Guardiola, as a player, because I want to get your answer in a different way, because then it'll probably determine what sort of coach you are now. So who would you like to play under if you were 15 years?
Anybody or Aussie coaches?
Anyone in the world. Because I could easily ask you the question, what sort of a coach are you? Are you an aggressive type? Are you a cuddler? And then, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Yep, I do. There's so many good ones. Particularly when I was playing, some of the more recent stars weren't coaching. They were probably just finishing their careers, like Pep and Jurgen. And it pains me to say it because of the team that I follow.
Yeah, here we go.
But I always had a lot of respect and just thought it would be amazing to work under that guy. It would be Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
And I'm a Liverpool supporter, so that's why I say it pains for me to say it. Him and Alex Ferguson were probably the two, but the Invincibles and the style of football and the brand that Arsenal had when they came through, there was just something about it. There was mystique to it. It was magic to watch at times, and their attacking style, the way they kept the ball and would just raid teams down both sides of the field and go with, explosive transitions. And I just thought Wenger was, there was something magical about him at the time.
Can I jump in on the Wenger one, guys? It's funny you say that, Barney, because I played with a guy at Reading called Massa who was at Monaco with Arsene Wenger. And through George Weah. And Mass said to me, he's never, and going back to what you said before, a lot of people are beginning to think you're nuts and really obsessed over everything that relates to running a football club and managing a team. And apparently Wenger was very like that. You know, the day before games, he'd go back to the stadium in Monaco, and he'd put scarecrows out on the pitch so that the pigeons wouldn't shit on the pitch and things like that. Just the real little things. You know, he wanted that pitch to be, perfect, not one bit of pigeon dropping on it. And he was so obsessive that he'd go back in the afternoons and do it. So, yeah, it's just kind of ironic that, but it's no secret that the best guys and the guys that eventually you know, climb to the top and become fantastic, you know, in their profession, a super obsessed and excessive compulsive on a lot of things that relate to the job they're in, you know, and football is no different. But I'd like to ask just kind of one from me. I came through a fantastic AIS system, which your father was a very big part of. You were a goalkeeper there at one stage. Sever had the opportunity to go there and didn't, went to Italy instead. You know, and there's a lot of people that go, oh, we need the AIS again. And, you know, I've spoken to Ron about it and, you know, it could be a good thing, but it also depends, you know, what age groups and who you play against, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think it's something that would need to come back, Barney, or can A-League clubs and their academies provide that same football education for young men and women?
Well, it's a big one to tackle the answer on. We could probably spend all day just talking about youth development and the pathway for young players these days. Obviously, it was a great grounding school that was built on also a network of state federations and institutes where back then we got all of the best players in each state together, firstly. There used to be the state identification camps and N-Swiss, Victorian Institute, SASE, like all of those. And we also had a youth league that, particularly on the Eastern Seaboard, when they had all the traditional NSL clubs, there was a great youth league competition where it was kind of the grounding school as well for a lot of those young players coming through that would play against the best kids in a regular competition and get more than, you know, the youth league at the moment, I think, is only 8 games for some A-League teams. The youth league back then would be 26 games, you know, 28 games, depending on the format. And many would remember this. And there used to be a rule too that they could play, I think, 4 overages. So quite often you could come up against Marconi Stallions and there'd be 4 first team players playing in that team, or Sydney United would drop a few scary boys down from the first team and you'd get a lesson. So I think it was that was a great grounding school for a lot of young players, whether they went to the institute or not. The youth, so many good players came out of the youth league because they got to play against the best in Australia in that competition on a regular basis and get, say, 26 games, but then also play in the NPL or the state competition as well during the winter and play another 26, 22, 28 games, depending on the format and the amount of clubs in the top division or second division. So if you were a young boy, you would easily should be playing 40 to 50 games a season against the best competition at your age group or the best in your state. And that's probably what we've lost and we don't see as much these days. This is my simplistic view to it. We need to get the best with the best together again, and they need to play more games of football as often as possible.
Can I ask the question, why did they – how come there's no more Australian Institute of Sport for football? What's the main reason? Because to me it seems criminal that there isn't anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you remember, Sever, back in the in when it was at its peak, it was like the chocolate factory. And every young footballer wanted the golden ticket to show up to have an invite to go to the chocolate factory. And many did, and there's quite many successful ones, you know, and obviously the lure to go overseas, and obviously, you know, that was your path. But talking to even some players now that are coaches that went through there, they were so excited. It was I've made it. I'm going to get to go there and refine myself as a footballer. And I agree. I think it was funding ultimately is why it ended up being shut down.
I think you made a real good point before, and it's something that I've discussed with your father on many occasions. You know, the later years, or you know, not so long ago, before it was kind of put to bed, the age group was a little younger. So once they came out of the AIS, they still had to go back into either A-League teams, A-League academies, or MPL youth setups or first grade type scenarios. Whereas the age group that I was in, we came out at 18 and we were almost, it was like, you know, a college draft pick in the USA for whatever, or you're almost ready to go into first team squads everywhere on the planet. And the other important thing that you mentioned was, you know, I remember playing, you know, we were National Youth League champions for 2 years in a row at the AIS. And we would go and play against Sydney City, Sydney Olympic, you know, Sydney Croatia. And because we were a good side, you know, Frank Farina, all these guys in it, they would drop four or five players. You know, I've played against a Marconi team at age 16, 17, and they had five Socceroos, you know, in their supposed resis, you know. And they would drop them on purpose, you know, when they played the AIS. So, you know, playing against quality, you know, and testing yourself every week is another, as you said, we can talk about development all day, but it is another key component. And it was just interesting that you mentioned that, because it's something that has always been a key part of conversations with your dad.
And Seva, Barney made the point about, and you and I have had this discussion about youth players not playing enough football. They seem to be always be on the training pitch. And he said it before, back then they were playing 50-odd games a year. You and I have said it needs to get back there, right?
Yeah, look, 15, 20 games to live, even 26 isn't enough. That's only half of it because, you want to arrive at a certain point in your time where you've played, like your youth career, you've played over 300, 400 games. That's where your education is. And even like, just if I were to touch back on the whole AIS thing, I think living on the grounds of the AIS, you are surrounded by athletes from all codes. You're picking up, it's an education. You're picking up what they do, what they don't do. Even if you're just going to see, like, for example, a volleyballer or a weightlifter, just different techniques of getting the most out of your body. It's just an all round education. And to be honest, if, go back to what Birch said and what Barney said, if NSL clubs, I remember playing against the AIS, we'd go down there once at 16, 17, we get spanked 8-0. But then the next time we went down there with five first graders, like, you know, it was a proper game because we were coached by, to be honest, if I were to say it lamely, we were coached by pretty much a father, you know. We weren't coached by someone, for example, with the ilk of Ron, Steve O'Connor. And I'm not putting Barney in that so-called farthing because he's got an education that no one, you know, someone would pay thousands and thousands of dollars for. But yeah, that was the difference. The difference was they were living, breeding it. And that's what we all wanted to get to. Myself, I had the choice to go overseas. And yeah, I did do that, but it was probably my biggest regret because another thing too, I wasn't getting picked for the Aussie squads because I wasn't so-called playing with the best players. And that was one of my regrets.
I think on reflection too, you also, the program itself put you into a professional environment where you were training more, you'd train every day. And not only from a football point of view, physically as well, like one of the big gaps in a lot of players when they go overseas is just the distance between sort of the level they've been at and then the professional athlete level that it is overseas. And it's ruthless over there. So there was also a lot of training, the physique of all the players and trying to improve them as athletes too, so that when they did go on to represent the young Socceroos or the Australian youth team or would go overseas, they were in a much better position after 2 years of training at an elite level, both physically and from a football point of view, to make the best opportunity that they could when they went overseas. So are we doing that now? You know, as a great young player that goes into an A-League setup, is he actually training more? Is he playing more games? Is he working on his body? Is he doing all those things that we've described for when his opportunity comes? I'm not sure. I won't say yes or no, but I'm just not sure that there's that same level of intensity of competition that we used to have. And it's a tough one to solve too, because the contact hours that I see of kids these days, and I've got young daughters that aren't into football, but I've got friends of young kids too. Their contact hours in football are nowhere near what it used to be because of all the other distractions that the world offers these days, right? The technology, iPads, all those online gaming, all these other things that keep kids inside instead of when we were kids, out in the street playing cricket, basketball, football, whatever it was always you'd be out there till sunset until somebody came out and whistled and told you to come in for dinner. Yeah. You get up in the morning, take off to school, you'd be playing football before class. At recess and lunch, you'd come home, meet with the kids in the street again. You'd be at it all the time. Now it's they go home, and the only contact hours they have from a football point of view is when they go to training, when they go to the club.
Doesn't that provoke more of the idea to get something like the AIS back up and running?
Yep, definitely.
Well, I'll go back to something Barney just said in terms of when I went in, it was the most professional setup, and I've been in professional setups in Europe, and it was equally as good, you know, at youth levels. And it was, you know, one key component as well was, you know, at 16, 17, 18, I was at the AIS, and Roland and Jimmy Shoulder would make sure that it was part of the program that we would spend a month and a half playing European tournaments. So, you know, at 17, we're playing finals against Real Madrid. We're beating Borussia Dortmund in semifinals. You know, we're playing against PSV Eindhoven, Ajax Amsterdam, you know, in tournaments in Holland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, on top of the professionalism that we had at the AIS, and Jim and Ron were fantastic. They would source information from, you know, the Olympic lifting coaches, the sprint coaches. You know, like Seva said before, we were surrounded by excellence, and Ron and Jim were the type of guys that were always seeking more information, weren't content with being fantastic coaches, especially, you know, Ron on stat levels, on the fitness things. He was always, you know, trying to improve the squad, and we were surrounded by excellence, and we got information and scientific information from all the other sports that were being funded heavily at the time at Olympic level. And I thought that was real, a real plus for us. And then on top of that, going to Europe at 16, 17, and you run out against, you know, Real Madrid, for example. And years ago, when we were kids, and when I was a kid in Australia, you'd look at European football and it was almost like going to the moon. You know, that's kind of wow. And, you know, you'd look at Real Madrid, just the names, Manchester United, and it was almost like, you know, they were these gods. You know, and at 17, 18, you run out at Dortmund Stadium v Real Madrid, and you lose 2-0, whatever, but you kind of, it's the first time that as a footballer, the as part of your education, you feel that you're worthy of being on the same pitch, and that, yes, you too can become a professional footballer. So I think it was little opportunities like that that I don't think, and I'm not knocking A-League clubs, they're getting better and better and better. And some of the academy setups are fantastic. But I think if we could play more international tournaments at a young level, I think that would help as well. What do you think, Barney?
Yeah, look, absolutely. We don't know the inner workings of each A-League club, but I think we also need to keep topping up the best players, because I still think we try to identify too early, and you get all these late bloomers that develop, you know, as they grow up, that may miss the boat. And I think we need to be a little more proactive and be braver to go back to the talent pool and see who's developed a little more, or physically may have developed and grown up and had a growth spurt and now has the power that you didn't see before, and continually test who's the best group you've got at each club that's coming through those academies and those younger age groups at A-League clubs, and get them together more often if it's possible. I mean, I know COVID's made everything impossible, and hopefully we're coming out of that now, but get them together more often, get them to play tournaments, have A-League youth tournaments where they're all in camp somewhere and they can all play against each other. Even if they play each other 3 or 4 times, do it. Take a big squad there. It'll give everybody an opportunity to watch it. We need to think outside the box. We've got such a vast country here that we have to deal with, and not a lot of opportunity. So we can sit on our hands and it just be what it is, or we can start to think of ideas outside the box and start to really push getting the best with the best back together again. I mean, there's some guys doing some great things up in the Gold Coast. I don't know if you know, but I only know because we've been invited as one of the clubs from South Australia that's towards the top of the ladder. they want to get the best NPL clubs all together. So there's a Super Cup that's been developed in at Gold Coast Knights by Adam Porridge and Jai Ingham. So I got an email from Jai. It's actually right now. We need to get back to them and let them know if our club's going to represent. But the format is that they're trying to get all the top NPL clubs in pre-season to go and play in a Super Cup up on the Gold Coast next year. So what a fantastic idea.
That'd be awesome.
How good would that be?
Yeah,
I think there's – I'm just checking my phone, but because I don't want to get this wrong, but and I'm sure the information's there upon request, but the email that I got, the teams that I saw that were going, immediately I was excited by it. I thought, what a great opportunity for all of my players, and particularly I've got a lot of young players in my team, to test themselves against the best other clubs around the country. You know, if you just look at here in South Australia, we play each other all the time. I think it's a close-knit sort of football community that they only know how good they are against what they're in front of in South Australia. Take them over in pre-season and they're going to come up against Melbourne Knights, Gold Coast Knights, Peninsula Power, Sydney Olympic, South Melbourne, Bentley Greens, Wollongong Wolves, wow. Avondale. There's some of the names going to this pre-season cup. I mean, for my players, that I know that would be a massive eye-opener for them to come up against some of those teams. And that's some of the thinking outside the box that we need to do. I think that probably would also speak to where NPL clubs are at to get closer to a B-League.
And Barney, before we let you go, on that point you're making there, do you think it's also funding that sets us back at times too? Like, you've just spoken about that tournament. Like, if you can't get funding for that, do you think your club would struggle to go, or have you got enough network and funds to be able to take them up there?
You're right. Funding will always be the challenge. I know that the guys that have organised it have tried to partner with companies locally to offer better accommodation deals to make it affordable for clubs to go there. And they're putting up money, I think prize money, so that everybody that goes there is prize money up for grabs. So it'll be real, and there'll be teams trying to win it to get higher up the ranks in terms of the prize money on offer. So it may help with your funding, but we're like no other. If you go around to a lot of the top NPL clubs, you'll get a lot of passion and people that want to participate in opportunities like this. When it comes to the funding to go to, we'll find the funding.
Yeah, okay.
By one way or another, we'll try and find the funding to go, because everybody gets excited about it. All the players would really enjoy it. And it's not too much. You know, I would think even in some clubs, you'll have players that would be happy to chip in. They might be, they say, yeah, sure. Well, you know, I can commit a couple of $100 or $400 or $500 just for airfares.
Because I want to be involved in that. It's an experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, boys, it's been wonderful to have Barney on and listen to the stories, I guess, how his father, Ron, analyzes his games and keeps him on his toes. Hopefully our viewers get another look into, I guess, what happens in football and the different stories that football has.
Yeah, I think we need, I'm going to call Barney a beautiful mind, because he's just got a wealth of information that needs to get out. And we say it every week, don't we, guys? Like, last week it was like, we need more Laurie McInnes. I think we need a lot more Barneys as well.
Yeah.
So that's the only way our game is going to go forward.
I appreciate that, guys. And as I've said in today's catch-up, you know, there's many more of me around. I come locally, I know that too. I come across them because we compete in the same league. But I admire and respect quite a few of the young coaches here in South Australia. They've all got great ideas and passion for the game. And just, sometimes we get into our own little competitive worlds and try and take each other down. And I think sometimes football can be also a little bit too negative and too toxic. At the end of the day, we're one code. We do need to stick together. I get that we want to beat each other, but not at the sacrifice of holding people back as well. There's some great coaches here, so I can only imagine the same interstate in all the other states too. And we need to harness that as much as we can and push it forwards.
And Birch, you must be proud of him.
Oh, look, I'm very proud of him. You know, I'm a family friend, and look, I know he's really well established in Adelaide at the moment, and he's doing his thing. And like I said, you know, I spoke to his father the other day, and Ron just said, well, you know, he doesn't actually go into too much dialogue in terms of the type of coaching or sessions and things like that when he talks about Barney with me. It's more on, well, you know, he's winning minor premierships and he's making grand finals, and he's doing really well. I know Ron's really proud of him, and you just never know in football. You know, I see Barney one day maybe coming back and leading an A-League club, Canberra A-League, you know, back home, coming back home and being the guy that leads Canberra United out in their first A-League season. You know, I'd love to be a part of that. And if I was, he'd certainly be, you know, a great leader of men to do that, you know, back in his hometown as such. And, you know, with his dad on the line as a consultant in any way, you know, we have a lot of good people down here that could create a wonderful, you know, A-League club. But that's just me from a selfish point of view and Canberra. You know, Barney's in a position now where it'll happen. It's just a matter of time that he'll get an A-League gig. And, you know, he's an intelligent boy. He'll surround himself with good lieutenants. You know, as he says, it's just a beautiful thing being in professional football.
Absolutely. Now, Barney, thank you, mate, for coming on. We really appreciate the chat, and boys, I certainly got a lot out of it. So, Barney, thank you for coming on, mate.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me. It's great talking to you all today.
Thanks, brother.
Boys, we'll see you guys next week.